Book of Galatians, one of the most fascinating books in the Bible. So today I'm going to give an overview of Galatians, and we're going to look at three things. We're going to look at the life of Saul, who became Paul. We're going to look at the law in Galatians, and then we're going to look at the Ten Commandments, because this is what the book of Galatians is all about. We're talking about freedom today. First of all, let's go to Saul and Paul. What lessons would you get, or what strikes you about Saul, who later became Paul? What things do you see that's significant of these two guys who are the same but two different names? What strikes you about Saul and Paul? Anything?
Their consistency.
Pardon?
Their consistency. They were both of them were very zealous. I mean, they had the same zeal, the same courage in both cases.
Absolutely. They were dedicated to what they were doing. Whether on the right end or the bad end, they were still dedicated. Charles, I saw your hand.
It's pretty much the same thing. Very strong-willed, very outspoken, very strong in their beliefs.
Yep.
Beliefs turned 180 degrees, but he's just as strong one way as he was the other way.
Okay. Is there a Bible text that says that that's a good principle to be? Can anybody think of a Bible text in the Bible, especially the New Testament, that says it's good if you're strong one way or if you're strong the other? Anybody think of a text?
Don't know the text, but it's better to not be lukewarm.
Yeah, Revelation. God came along and said, look, I'd rather you be hot or I'd rather you be cold, but I don't want you to be lukewarm. Why? Why would he say that? Because this is absolutely one of the traits that made Saul into Paul. Why would God say, I'd rather you be hot, or I'd rather you be cold, I don't want you to be lukewarm? Why would he say that?
It's kind of like the opposite of love is in hate, it's indifference.
Okay.
If you're indifferent, you're basically nothing.
Okay, yeah. Can you do anything with indifference? No. You have a kid or grandkid? Well, I don't care. I don't care. Whatever. You can't do anything with indifference. And that's why Jesus was saying in Revelation, well, if you're really cold, I can work with you. If you're really hot, I can work with you. But if you're lukewarm, I almost feel like I want to spew you out of my mouth. Because you can't do anything with somebody that's just sitting there riding the fence. And so Paul was a dedicated person to kill Christians. And he did it with zeal. And God was able to take that zeal that direction. Let's give number 7 a nice hand for showing up. How's your foot?
I was doing the healing. Turned out I didn't need surgery. It's reattaching itself to the doctor's surprise. Very unusual, so.
Good. We'll take that. You didn't have a birthday today or this week, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay, good. Because I'm not in the mood to sing happy birthday anymore. Now the birthday mood. So, that's one thing. What else did we learn from Saul and Paul? What other things strike you about his life?
He was observant. I mean, they talk about him watching Stephen being stoned and holding the coats of the stoners, yeah, and the reality of watching how Stephen, yeah, handled that. So, I mean, there were things that were impacting him.
Did that do anything for him?
Not at that moment.
Not at that moment. It's a principle we need to understand on Christian witnessing. Just because somebody doesn't get it today doesn't mean they won't get it tomorrow. Can you imagine how any Jew at the stoning of Stephen could sit there and watch that man as he's being stoned to death, praying, looking into heaven, and the demeanor he had and not be touched by it. But they wasn't. And so there sat Saul holding the coats. He was too young to get into the action. He had, remember, poor eyesight. So he probably couldn't see Stephen good enough to stone him. Shall I try that one again? Paul had poor... never mind, I'm telling you. So, but it had no effect on him at that point. What else about this Paul, Saul who became Paul? Anything else strike you? Yes?
I'm impressed that God chose that person to do what he's done. I mean, God could have picked out anyone and has, you know. But Paul was a very dynamic person. And I'm assuming that Jesus said, you know, this is the guy I want.
Okay.
He's way over here right now. He's either going to do a lot of damage, or I can take that, transform this man, and he's going to do a lot of good.
Yeah. If he was this good over here, what could he do if he was over here?
And we've seen that, you know, with in our experiences, we've seen people that have made that kind of transformation from way on one side, and they turn out to be a dynamic.
Absolutely, absolutely. How was he converted? Over here. They want you over here or over there. They do not want you over here to the left. Why, I do not know. How was he converted?
Knocked down. It was knocked down.
Anybody got a Chuck E. Cheese card? He was knocked down and converted. This to me is one of the two great principles. God will do whatever He needs to do in your life to get your attention. If He's got to blind you, knock you off of your horse, and leave you blind for 3 days, send a prophet who did not want to go, whose opening statement to God was, God, do you know who this guy is? He kills people like me. If that's what it takes for God to get your attention, He'll do that. And the other great principle that I get out of that, and it's more personal, I'm going to share an experience with you that I'd probably be smart not to do it. But, hey, what are you going to do, fire me as a Sabbath school teacher? Do you realize that Paul went back and preached at the churches where he had killed people's husband, imprisoned people's fathers, killed mothers' sons, and now he comes back and preaches to those same churches. Now, knowing God's ministry, there's a church not too far from here that will remain nameless. Starts with a C, but it will be nameless. And we were contacted and asked to put our ministry on their cable channel. And so we did quite a lot of work to get that done. And we are very excited about it, obviously. And so I went to make the final arrangements. And the guy says, I don't know what happened, but somebody in our church that begins with C, that's not too far from here, said that there's some things in your all's background and we cannot allow you to be on TV. Even though they had ran 3ABN and ran our segment of 3ABN on that, but we were not allowed to be on their channel because I remember when. The only thing I said was, I wonder if the Apostle Paul would have a hard time being in your church that begins with a C that's unnamed, that's not too far from here. And I look at that because we all have things in our past that we're not proud of. We've all made mistakes, certainly not proud of. But can you imagine Paul looking at his preaching schedule and saying, well, I'm going to some other church. And wow, the last time I was there, I put four people to death. Look at the witness that Paul had for everywhere that he went. The devil will bring your past up all the time. He'll bring up to you you're unworthy. Why, James, I remember. Remember when you did, you see? But it's God who says, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But look at him now. And that's why I admire Paul. Yeah, he was tenacious. And God can use you when you're tenacious. Yes, he was converted. But I think if we took time to go around the class, we would have some interesting conversion stories also. Because God will do whatever he has to get your attention. And the third is, there's no greater witness than what God has done in your life. Galatians is about law. Now, to understand Galatians and the Adventist church, we have to put some things into a historical significance. In 1888, at a general conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota, everything came to head about the law in Galatians. Because the law in Galatians, and Paul writing this letter, has absolutely changed people's lives. One of the greatest people changed by the book of Galatians was Martin Luther. Habakkuk 2:4 and the book of Galatians had the most important influence on his life. The just shall live by faith. Paul makes a point of saying, we are no longer under bondage. We are no longer under law. Well, in 1888, they had a big problem with that statement. Because what is the central focus of the Seventh-day Adventist? By name tells us what it is. What is it? What are we known for?
Fourth commandment.
Keeping the Sabbath. And so in 1888, the great discussion came. We're no longer under law. We are free. And the discussion was, what law is they talking about in the book of Galatians? And so they came that there's two laws. There's a ceremonial law. What are the ceremonial laws? When were they given and what were they for? Pardon?
Point to
Jesus. When were they given?
Prior to Jesus.
Okay. When specifically?
After sin.
At offering of a lamb at when Adam sinned, and mainly to the children of Israel when they were in the desert. Here was all these ceremonial laws pointing to Christ, pointing to his death. And so the good Seventh-day Adventist people, leaders, they said, the law in Galatians is the ceremonial law. The ceremonial law was to lead us to Jesus. And when Christ came, it's now done away with, but it's done nothing with the moral law. And so there were two gentlemen by the name of Wagner and Jones who presented some outstanding evidence that the law in Galatians is both the ceremonial and both the moral law. We are not only set free from the ceremonial law, but we're set free from the bondage of the moral law. And wow, this started the argument. How can that be? How can that be? How can that be? Then comes Ellen White. And Ellen White states that the law in Galatians is both talking about the ceremonial law as well as the moral law. Then she added a sentence, especially the moral law. And we're told that the spirit there in the General Conference of 1888 of Seventh-day Adventists, that the spirit, if Jesus would have appeared, was the same spirit they had at Calvary. And Wagner and Jones eventually left the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and people said, oh, there's our proof. And Ellen White, does anybody know what happened with Ellen White after 1888?
Went to Australia.
She went to Australia, sent by the General Conference. Now, if you were sent in Australia in the 1890s, what did that mean?
Isolated.
Yeah, no influence. But yet it was there in Australia. She wrote Steps to Christ, Thoughts from the Mount of Blessing, The Desire of Ages. Some of her greatest writings were done in Australia. Abraham Lincoln, I'm reading for the second time a book, Team of Rivals, Doris Kearns Goodwin, Pulitzer Prize on Life of Abraham Lincoln's a fan. Fantastic book. She spent 10 years writing it, and she said when she came to the final chapters of Abraham Lincoln's death that she just literally sobbed. She was entwined so much. When Lincoln was writing the Emancipation Proclamation, it took him a long time because he said, I want to write this proclamation where nobody misunderstands how I want to give the slaves freedom. This is Paul's gospel to 1888 Seventh-day Adventist and to 2017 Seventh-day Adventist. We are free. Galatians is the proclamation that we are free. We're not under the ceremonial law. We're not under the moral law. We are free. Now the question comes, if the ceremonial laws are done away with, we can understand that. You know, if somebody wants to do the Passover, so what? Let them do it. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's not obligation. Paul is saying, we're not obligated, and I'm going to get specific because I don't like people to misunderstand, we're not obligated to be under the Ten Commandments. Wow! Now, a lot of people don't like that. Protestant world says, well, we're not under law, we're under grace. Is that a true statement? Well, we used to say no. But certainly it's a true statement. That's what Paul's saying. So, let's go back and look at the moral law. I've been teaching Sabbath school for a long time. Some would say way too long. The biggest conflict I've ever had in a Sabbath school class, and I mean literally people were standing up shaking their finger at me, was the question I asked, Would a Christian have radar in his car so that he could break the law? Remember that, Sue?
Radar detector.
Yeah, radar detector in their car so they could break the law. I had people standing up screaming at me. I was just kind of bored for the day, Terry, and thought, that'll stimulate a little bit of conversation, and boy, did it. I mean, they went berserk on me. The second biggest conflict I ever had in the class, which, by the way, was the same class. Remember the little girl that was in the well in Midland? And how the church came on Thursday night here, and we prayed, and the whole world's watching. Well, I was stupid enough to say, as Christians, we're bypassing everyday people in pit, and we just kick dirt on their pit and move them by and say, get out of my way. Then all of a sudden, we all feel good because we pray for some little girl in Midland that we don't know. Why everybody around us is in a pit of sin, and they went berserk on that one. So I don't teach those anymore. You can't believe what they called me. But this one I want you to think about before you answer. Is that fair? Because I love to ask this question. Before sin arose on this earth, and don't raise your hand, don't say anything, I just want you to think, were the Ten Commandments in heaven? What is the definition of the Ten Commandments? What do we love to give as a definition of the Ten Commandments? Right. Transcript of God's character. What does that mean? What does that actually mean? It's a great quote. Heard it all my life. What does that mean? Were the Ten Commandments in heaven before there was sin on this earth? I want you to get a clear answer in your brain, not here. I'm not asking for volunteers. I will in a minute if you want to. But once you get, were the Ten Commandments in heaven before there was sin on this earth? Because this is vital in the next 12 weeks as we talk about Galatians. You see, if we're talking about the law that has freedom, and we think it's the ceremonial law, we can come up with that one. Oh, well, that was... So we don't have to kill lambs anymore. We don't have to do the Passover anymore. We don't have to do a burnt offering anymore. That's simple. But when you say that the law gives us now freedom, can't do that. So was the Ten Commandments in heaven before sin entered the world? Would anybody like to comment on that? Yes, Edward.
No, there wasn't.
I like a person that just says no. Okay. Well, let's examine that. God brings all the angels together. And He says, I'm going to give you 10 commandments. How many of y'all went to school? There was a rule that you couldn't chew gum in school. Which came first? The chewing of gum in school or the rule? Chew gum. Huh? Yeah. And then somebody said, well, I think we ought to have a rule that you don't chew gum. Because that makes sense. It sounded profound when I heard this. As I get older and older, I'm not sure it's quite as profound, but it's true. Do you know in the language where there is no stuttering, there is no word for stuttering? Does that make sense, Roger? Why? Don't need to define it. There is none. So, I want you to picture God in heaven, and He's given out the Ten Commandments. And He says, now number 5, I want you to honor your mother and father as long as you live. And Jobadiah, Angel Jobadiah. Yes. What, Jobadiah? What's a father? What's a mother? Thou shalt not kill. What's killing? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Who with? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. What do you mean? There were no Ten Commandments in heaven. They weren't needed. That's why Paul says, when sin came about, the law was added. If nobody is chewing gum in school, why would you even come up with the thought, don't chew gum in school? So now a good question is, well, what law did Satan break then in heaven? Because that's certainly a fair question. So what's the answer? What law did he break? There was a law in heaven. Very simple law. By the way, will there be 10 commandments in heaven when we go there? Will we be getting up from Sue doing gardening? Me telling her to wake me up when she gets through with gardening? Go out and read the Ten Commandments to remind ourselves that we should have no other God before us. We shouldn't kill people. There was one law in heaven. And this truly is a transcript of God's character. If you had to pick one, is it adjective or adverb? God is what? Was that an adjective or an adverb? Huh? Okay, good. Huh? Okay. Every once in a while I kind of think, what did I do good in school at? But anyway, when you think of a word for God, God is, what's the word? Love. Patriarchs and prophets, the first word, three words is, God is love. The great controversy, the last three words, God is love. There was a law in heaven. And it was a simple law. God was full of love for His created beings. And He gave them that love. And they took His love. And like any relationship, they reciprocated that, they gave back that love to God. And this was the cycle. God loves Ron. Ron basks in that love, and He gives the love back. Call it a relationship. You can't command love. I can't say to Ron, "Ron, like me." I demand that you like me. You can't do that. And so God poured out His love on the beings, and they took that love and they gave it back to Him. And they had the circle of love, the only law in heaven. I love you, you love me, I love you. Remember, Jesus said the gospel should be where a little child can understand it. I love you, you love me. I love you, you love me. That simple. But one day, in the devil's heart, there arose pride in his life. No commandment that said, "Thou shalt not have your own pride," did not exist. And it began to eat on him. And so he was in taking God's love, but he found himself giving less back because he kept saying, "Well, this isn't fair." Kind of like not having your birthday on the right day to get your dog. This isn't fair. And then he began to go to the other angels and said, "Hey, have you ever noticed? What do you think of this?" "Well, I never thought about that." Meanwhile, God is just pouring out His love. And it finally got to the point where Lucifer started returning less and less. And he began to draw away from the love of God. And he got into rebellion. Three times we're told that Jesus met with Lucifer, book Plan of Redemption. And in one of the times He showed Lucifer where his rebellion would lead. But Lucifer was so committed to what he wanted to do that he would not listen. And it says that Jesus put His arms around him and he wept bitterly. You see, in heaven there was no need for 10 commandments because there was no sin. You don't need the law to sin. 1 John says sin is also, big word, the transgression of the law. And so eventually, what happened was that God could no longer appeal to the Lucifer. And a third of the angels, how could that be? A third of the angels followed Him. Was God angry? No. Was He hurt? Tremendously. Was the Ten Commandments broken? No. The biggest law of love was broken. I love you, but you don't love me back. I love you, but you want to go your own way. I love you, but you want to do things your way. And finally, as the father did with the prodigal, with great tears, he says, I've got to let you go. I've got to let you go. And thus we have the great controversy. Here's what's amazing about the character of your Heavenly Father. If one third left, how many did that leave? I'd like to see if we have mathematicians in here. Two thirds, thank you. Here's how great God is. Did those two thirds of the angels, Roger, right there say, man, we understand this all? No. Isn't that amazing? They sat there and wondered about God themselves. For 4,000 years of our earth's history, they sat there and they said, we don't think the devil's right. We think God is right.
We're not sure.
But we're not sure. The evidence isn't in yet. They see a flood. Man, can you imagine how Satan went before the angels in heaven and said, hey, do you see what I'm talking about? Eight people out of the whole thing, God destroyed everybody else because they went, I told you God is authoritative. I told you what He was like. And here's the proof. 8 people, and one of those is a drunkard. And the two-thirds in heaven said, wow. However, we're still going to trust God. Can you imagine God walking above, not just the angels, the entire universe is watching. Can you imagine what God was going through? They trusted Him, but they didn't know. They trusted Him, but they hadn't. What does that say about your relationship with God? You're supposed to just take everything as it comes along? No. Ask Him. Plead with Him. Once in a while I ask God, what in the heck's going on? What was the evidence to the universe? What was the evidence to the two-thirds of the angels?
Calvary.
They knew Lucifer and they knew him well and they admired him. They knew Jesus, they knew him well and they loved him. And then all of a sudden, there on that Friday, they saw Lucifer, the one that they had admired for ages, sitting there cheering that crowd on to crucify him. They saw that demonic look on his face. They saw him and they saw Jesus saying, Father, they don't know what they're doing, forgive them. And that was the final proof after 4,000 years of our history. God, you are correct. And Lucifer, you are not. Why do you think that Jesus keeps the nail prints in His hands for eternity? Why?
He was right. I mean, to show that the evidence that they've been through it before.
I like that statement a little bit better. That's right. See, one of the other questions I ask a lot, which I won't ask in here because I don't have time, can sin arise again the second time? Well, if you say no, that's all I want to know. If you say no, then why is God playing a trick on us for all of our lives when something changes at the end? Why didn't He just change it in the beginning? So the question answer has got to be, will it? Could it? Absolutely. Because we have free will. Will it? No. Why? This is what sin does. Separates you from the life giver. And that's all we need to be reminded. Because the law in heaven for eternity will be, I love you, you love me, and we just keep going down eternally, having that relationship. One begins to think, I wonder if this relationship is like it could be. I remember what it. I remember. Then what is the function of law? Well, it's a good question. That's what we're going to spend the next 12 weeks on. We're going to study, and I hope I get to teach the lesson, and if I don't, I'll see that I do. Paul says the law is a schoolmaster in Galatians. Now, what do you think a schoolmaster means? What does the word schoolmaster, you hear the schoolmaster, I'm a schoolmaster, what does that mean? Huh?
Keeps order.
Pardon me?
Keeps order.
Keeps order, okay. What else does that mean? I'm a schoolmaster.
Leader in learning.
Leader, okay. What else? Teacher? Okay. Well, that's what we kind of like to think. The law's a teacher. Well, what you're going to find out is Paul is using a Greek word, pi, something or other, something around it to go. Can't think of the word. I'll have it by the time I get there. He says this, the law is this kind of schoolmaster.
Authority.
Pardon me?
Authority.
That's a good one. Absolutely, you think of a schoolmaster with authority. He says the law is a schoolmaster, a pi, die, Compolos or something like that. Here's what that word means. To the Greek, and this is who he's writing to, the Jewish Gentiles. To the Greek, a schoolmaster was a servant or a slave that took the child in the morning and he took him to school and dropped, you okay? Dropped him off. And then he hung around to the end of school, and then he brought him home. So who did the teaching? The slave that took him there? Or the teacher? Who did the teaching? Pardon? The teacher. And Paul says, this is what the law does. You can sit and focus on those Ten Commandments all you want to. Thou shalt not kill. Well, I didn't kill anybody today. Honor thy father and thy mother. I sure am trying. Paul says, all the law does, when needed, is take you to the teacher. And who's our teacher? Who's our teacher? Christ. Now do you begin to understand also in Galatians when we come to it that he says the law was added, A-D-D-E-D, because of what? Sin. Because of sin. Where you do not chew gum, you have no law. Where you do not stutter, you have no word. Where you have no sin, you have no Ten Commandments. We are so afraid of losing our most dynamic message we're known for is that we go to church on the wrong day. That if we're not careful, we become bondage under that. Oh, I've got to keep the Sabbath. Paul says, does this do away with law? Absolutely not. It establishes it. So let's go back and see where the Ten Commandments came into origin. Now we've already figured out that it wasn't in heaven because it didn't even make sense to be in heaven. So here's a group of people just going through the Red Sea experience. And God comes up before them and says, will you follow me? And what do they say? Yeah. Absolutely. And he said, well, come to the mountain. Now, Sue and I are going to eat lunch today with Sandra Cole. Now I can say, we will eat lunch with Sandra Cole. Is that a command, a fact? We will eat lunch with Sandra Cole. Or I can simply say, we will eat lunch with Sandra Cole. What's the difference? One is a command, an imperative. You shall not kill. Or I can say, we're going to eat lunch with Sandra Cole. That's just going to be a natural consequence in 2 minutes when this class is out. And that's what God said on the mountain. Not that you shall not kill. He said, what was the question he asked before he gave the Ten Commandments? Will you follow me? They said yes. He said then, when you follow me, you will not have any gods before me. If you get to know me, you won't want to kill anybody. You won't want to take my name in vain. And you'll appreciate the Sabbath day. A day that I set apart for you to be with your friends, family, and me. And you won't lie when you know me. The Ten Commandments were given as a promise of what we will become like when we know Jesus. We flip-flop it. In order to know Jesus, you better not kill. And you want the proof? How many times did we sit here in the old days and read the 25, 26, 27, 28? Have they added any new ones lately? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you? A checklist. So no wonder Paul says, you're not under the law. You're under God's grace. But does it do away with the law? Absolutely not. Because as you grow closer to Him and you become more like Him, you will not want to kill. You will not want to bear false witness. You will not want to commit adultery. You will honor. you wouldn't think about worshiping anybody else. That's the message the world is waiting for. Father in heaven, thank you for who you are. Thank you for your love. Thank you for the law that matters the most. By beholding you, we become changed. Appreciate this class and these people. Give us a good blessing. Today is my prayer. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.